Hi everyone, this is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF, November 1, the Bravo Lima Foxtrot. I'll be reading for your enjoyment today the Quarter Century Wireless Association Journal for the summer of the year 2007. The QCWA Journal is published four times a year, quarterly, by the Quarter Century Wireless Association Incorporated. The headquarters, main office, is P.O. Box 3247, Framingham, Massachusetts, zip code 01705. Their phone number, 508-405-1930. This recording is being produced and distributed by the Courage Handyham System, 3915 Golden Valley Road, Golden Valley, Minnesota 55422, in cooperation with QCWA. This material is for use only by Handyham members or the QCWA membership, of course. Handyhams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email address handyham@courage.org. And there's a fine website for the Handyham system at www.handyham.org. The front cover for the September 2007 journal is in beautiful full color with a montage of locations in Colorado where the 2007 International QCWA Convention will be held this year. I'll give you more details on that as we begin to go through the magazine. First, I'd like to give you the list of QCWA officers and the board of directors. The president is John B. Johnson, called W3BE. Vice President Leonard Nathanson, W8RC. The Secretary Walter Supina, N3WS. Treasurer Frank Harris, WA4PAM. And the General Manager Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD. A full list of directors is also included on page 2. Let's begin with the President's Report, authored by John B. Johnston, W3BE. All-Star Professional Honor Awards. In our winter journal, a call went out for our chapters to nominate QCWA members for our FCC Rules, Section 97.1 All-Star Presidential Honor Awards for 2006. We pause annually to reflect upon just who it is among us that we admire as our role models in helping to fulfill each of the five principles establishing the very basis and purpose for the type of amateur service our FCC expects us to provide in return for being allowed to use some highly valuable radio spectrum. Here are the recipients. Section 97.1A for service to the public as a voluntary non-commercial communication service, particularly with respect to providing emergency communications. Jim Cross, WI3N, for his work as Maryland, D.C., ARRL Section Manager. Section 97.1B, for continuing and extending the amateur operator's proven ability to contribute to the advancement of radio art. Walter Maxwell, W2DU, for his many technological contributions. Section 97.1C, for advancing skills in both the communication and technical phases of the radio art, Raul Anders, K3RA, for his outstanding work in teaching amateur operator license preparation classes for the Historical Electronic Museum Amateur Radio Club. Section 91.D, for expanding the existing reservoir within our amateur service of trained operators, technicians, and electronic experts, Rob Rose, AA3RR, for his outstanding work as a team leader with the Laurel Amateur Radio Club VEC. Section 97.1E, for continuing and extending the amateur operator's unique ability to enhance international goodwill, Alice King, AI4K, for her outstanding accomplishments in DX operating. It's also a great pleasure to announce the recipients of Special Presidential Honor Awards of 2006. Woody Brem, K3YV, for his work in re-energizing our Gil Crossley chapter, number 203. Pete Hansen, call W8TWA, for his outstanding contributions to our Michigan chapter, number 10. Chip Morgan, N3IW, for reactivating the Steinman Station, SB1915 train station telegraph office, recreated at the Railroad Museum of Pennsylvania in Strasburg. Ken Simpson, W8EK, for his work in collecting and providing meeting information about our QCWA chapters in the state of Florida. Paul Turner, W1DLP, for his exceptional contributions to QCWA Citrus Chapter number 45 as a loyal and dedicated member and longtime secretary. Congratulations to all of our award recipients. Thanks for making amateur radio the greatest hobby in the world. Thanks also to everyone who submitted a nomination. Now, in the category of the 2008 election, the very first thing that had to be done upon taking office last September was set into motion a process for selecting the members for our next election to our board of directors. Past Secretary and former Director Alan Pickering, KJ9N, was named chair of our nominating committee along with former President, former Vice President, and former Director Croft Taylor, VE3CT, and former Director Harold Chase, W1EES. They have been searching for candidates to run in our election in the spring of 2008. The committee slate is due to our general manager by June 15, 2007, at which time the committee will be dismissed. The slate will be announced in our fall journal. You may also be nominated by a petition signed by at least 25 members in good standing. It must be submitted to our general manager by December 15, 2007. All of the candidates on the ballot will be invited to attend and observe our board of directors meeting in Denver. It will begin at 8 a.m. Mountain Standard Time on Thursday, October 4, 2007. Requirements for running are that you must have been a member in good standing continuously for more than 2 years immediately preceding the nomination. You must be able to use email. Once you meet those requirements, it will be necessary to get elected. How you do that is up to you. Serving on our standing committees apparently can help. All of our current officers and directors did just that. Once you are elected, moreover, you must serve faithfully in carrying out your duties. These are all volunteer, non-paid, and non-compensated positions. It is your golden opportunity to give back a little something to amateur radio. Now a commentary on drive-through exams. Several members have asked for my thoughts on the issue of no code and easy exams. Okay, so here are my 2 cents. For me, and probably most other hams who mastered the onerous challenges of self-study and code practice for those former meaningful examinations, taking time out from work, traveling to that imposing federal building, and qualifying under the icy scrutiny of that professional examiner? Got that right, John. It is disturbing to observe our hobby being stripped piece by piece of the mystique that has made our successes so very special to us. It is difficult to contemplate how licensees currently qualifying by drive-through examinations will ever come to respect the and appreciate our hobby as much as we do. Regarding activities, in January, our QCWA banner was flying highly at 2 hamfests in Maryland, and our Vic Clark Chapter 91 entertained my All About Our QCWA PowerPoint presentation. In February, it was a pleasure to join with our Citrus Chapter 45 in meeting and greeting many members and prospective members at the 2007 Orlando Hamcation. It was a world-class gathering, and our QCWA booth was the best ever. In March, our Baltimore Chapter 20 held its annual Welcome Sweet Springtime Banquet, where the guest of honor was the legendary Hugh Trumbull, W3ABC, who received his 75-year award. Our speaker was Diane Zimmerman, AA3OF, chairman of the Foundation for Amateur Radio Scholarship Fund Committee that administers 56 scholarship awards, including our 16. Among other things that we didn't know, she told us about some of the hams who have received scholarships in the past. We all learned that it is a magnificent program that is a lot harder to administer than it sounds. We came away elated with a greater sense of pride in our organization. Let's keep our QCWA banner flying. And it's signed W3BE, Whiskey 3, Bravo Echo. Next up is the General Manager's Report. General Manager Chuck Wallbridge, call K1IGD, Kilo 1, India Golf Delta, the summer of 2007. Dayton Summary. Dayton was the noisy, crowded, confused, live entertainment event that it always has been. It was a pleasure to meet many old and new QCWA members who stopped by the booth. I want to thank all who contributed their time to booth duty, helping to enlist new members and renew memberships for many more. We were thrown a curveball when our booth reservation was confirmed. We were moved from 470, our site the last 3 years, to 420. That's the way it goes. For information, the number of new slant renewals for this year are new, 34. Renewal, 29. We enjoyed the Friday night QCWA banquet and our thanks to members of Chapter 9 for their attention to the details of organizing the event. Congratulations to Bob Heal, who received the QCWA Hall of Fame Award for his many contributions to amateur radio and the communications community. Ham radio is alive and well. Sure, we all know that. But headquarters was pleasantly surprised this past week by a visit from the father of twin boys carrying applications for a FAR scholarship, F-A-R. These two boys have found amateur radio. They refuse to use the word ham until they have operated for a few years and have earned the term ham. Amateur radio has provided the incentive for furthering their education. Both will be entering RIT, that's Rochester, New York, this fall as electrical engineering students. Neither boy had any idea what they wanted to do career-wise until the bug bit. Because of their enthusiasm, a local high school ham radio club was reactivated and new members added. Both are looking forward to their involvement with local amateurs when they enter college this fall. Their enthusiasm is inspiring. There has been much written and spoken lately about the lack of new hams. I personally don't believe it. These two boys are examples of young students who, by being exposed to technology, have found the perfect match for their interests. They, by their enthusiasm, have brought others into the ham radio environment and intend to continue the hobby on campus. Reports in the journal and through personal knowledge indicate to me that many of our QCWA members are involved in this educational activity. Elsewhere in this issue, you will find a report about the Roy Neal Amateur Radio Mentoring Program, which the QCWA Board of Directors has chosen to support in conjunction with the Amateur Radio Newsline. The program's goal is to expand the enlistment and training of new amateur radio operators. I encourage all members to participate when and where possible in these types of programs. Direct donations to QCWA. Tony Hirsch, H-I-R-S-C-H, called W-8-R-S-H, Whiskey 8, Romeo Sierra Hotel. Chairman of the Finance Committee, reached the following details of the new pension protection plan recently enacted by the U.S. Congress and signed by President Bush. The Pension Protection Act, August 2006, allows taxpayers over 70.5 5 years of age to donate money to a charitable, those qualified as 501c3, such as QCWA, directly from their IRA account. The distributions will be tax-free and avoid a penalty on early withdrawals. Taxpayers are allowed to donate up to $100,000 for 2007 only from their IRA. Since the distribution will not be included in taxable income, individuals will not be able to claim a tax deduction for the charitable contribution. This provision is effective for the year 2007 only. To qualify, the donation must be made directly to the charitable organization. For QCWA, donations can be specified for the QCWA endowment and/or scholarship funds. Please obtain full details from your accountant or tax advisor. QSO Party. The fall QSO Party scheduled date is September 15 through September 16, 2007. Log sheets are available online or from headquarters. Thank you for your participation and cooperation in QCWA activities. Have a great summer. Signed, 73, Chuck Walbridge, K1IGD, General Manager. One brief note here before I continue. This is a disclaimer. Opinions expressed by the authors of articles contributed to the journal do not represent the official position of the officers or directors of the Quarter Century Wireless Association, Incorporated. What follows now is the article that was mentioned a few moments ago. The QCWA, an amateur radio newsline, to partner in the Roy Neal K6DUE Amateur Radio Mentoring Program. The author here is Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF. The Board of Directors of the Quarter Century Wireless Association has voted to affiliate with and co-sponsor with Amateur Radio Newsline Incorporated, the Roy Neal K6DUE Amateur Radio Mentoring Program. This is an outstanding post-licensing educational peer program first created in 2003 in honor of the late NBC newsman and ham radio devotee Roy Neal, call Kilo 6 Delta Uniform Echo. Now, in 2007, both QCWA and AR Newsline believe that the decision to join together in expanding this project comes at a crucial time for our hobby slant service. This is because thousands of previous VHF, UHF-only operators are expected to have their first real experiences on the HF bands as a result of the latest round of restructuring of the United States Amateur Radio Service. That change occurred on Friday, February 23rd, when the new rules abolishing Morse testing came into effect. With the Morse test no longer a prerequisite for access to the high-frequency bands in the United States, most experts believe that the lure of international contacts in the spectrum below 30 MHz will be the catalyst that will entice many to take and pass the needed theory elements to become general class operators. Once they do, they will likely purchase all band transceivers and take to the airwaves. And it is likely that, point, many will have questions regarding HF operation. Point, some will require assistance with antenna and station setup. Point, a need to learn the protocol of international contacts, etc. In other words, a lot of new people with new radios in need of guidance. The belief is that by using the already in-place organizational structure of AR Newsline's mentoring program database in conjunction with the expertise of the membership of QCWA, that the transition to high-frequency operation can be made easier for those who are seeking such guidance. The program is not, however, limited to HF operation, albeit that is likely to be its center of focus for the foreseeable future. VHF, UHF enthusiasts will have access to assistance in such areas as building and operating a repeater, talking by bouncing signals off the moon, and anything else that makes a ham a ham. why it started. Roy Neal, K6DOE, was a driving force in the structure of amateur radio as well as a member of the board of directors of AR Newsline. From 1973 until the time of his death, he produced, directed, and or appeared in almost a dozen ham radio-related films and videos. These include the title, Moving Up to Amateur Radio, The New World of Amateur Radio, and Ham Radio in Space. Roy Neal is also credited with convincing NASA to permit astronauts who are licensed radio amateurs to take their ham gear to space. The first, in 1983, was Dr. Owen Garrett, W5LFL, on board Space Lab 1, flying in the cargo bay of the orbiter Columbia. This flight and the subsequent STS-51F mission of Dr. Tony England, W0ORE, the first time SSTV was taken into space, resulted in the creation of the Shuttle Amateur Radio Experiment, SAREX, and Amateur Radio on the International Space Station, ARIS, programs. Those of us who had the honor of knowing Roy were keenly aware of his willingness to help anyone better themselves. He was always willing to share his lifetime of knowledge in many areas, including news gathering, science, space exploration, and, of course, amateur radio. Sadly, Roy passed away on August 15, 2003, due to complications arising from heart valve replacement surgery a few days earlier. Where the idea came from. The Roy Neal K6DUE Amateur Radio Mentoring Project is loosely based on a similar program created by Tony Award-winning Broadway performer, choreographer Ann Rinking. For those of you not aware, Miss Rinking was a student of and performed with the legendary choreographer and director Bob Fosse. She is now carrying on a mentoring tradition in the art of dance through her own educational foundation known as the Broadway Theater Project. This is a Florida-based training program connecting students with seasoned theater professionals. If we may quote Miss Rinking, it's sort of an unwritten law or rule in a world of dance that you pass on what you know. This particular craft is at its best when it's passed from one person's hands to the next. Now, if you think about it, what Ann Rinking says about dance applies equally to our world of amateur radio. Maybe more so because, for decades, the knowledge and tradition of our hobby service was passed down from seasoned operators to newcomers, one to one. Unfortunately, in the ham radio of today, this art of mentoring that we call elmering seems to be disappearing. It seems, for the most part, to have been replaced by weekend cram class training, the more tedious world of online home study, and now the availability of written-only upgrades. While these paths may provide lots of technologically trained hams, they do not turn out skilled operators. Nor can any of these methods turn out hams who really appreciate the art of amateur radio. Only one-on-one mentoring or elmering can do that. The Roy Neal K6DUE Amateur Mentoring Project is similarly structured to Miss Rinking's Broadway Theater Project in that it fosters those one-on-one relationships that go well beyond the knowledge necessary to pass a ham radio exam. Rather, it kicks in after a person is licensed and puts an emphasis on our traditional ham radio values by pairing new hams with skilled operators who are willing to teach them such radio art forms. In essence, to pass along the living traditions that make amateur radio what it is to all of us old-timers, regardless of our chronological age. How it works. To make this work, two groups of hams are needed. First are the new or upgraded hams to come forward and say, I want to learn more. With the recent restructuring, it is likely that there will soon be a lot of them. Also needed are the skilled operators who are willing to donate time to assist those in need of training. The ideal mentor is a hand with several decades of first-hand experience, a love of the hobby, a willingness to share his or her knowledge with others, and some spare time to devote. Retirees looking for ways to serve the hobby are ideal candidates to become mentors. To get the project underway, Joe Eisenberg, call K0NEB, has created the necessary databases and begin the process of matching volunteer mentors to those wishing instruction. All that is missing is you, Y-O-U. How to get involved? If you want to become the guiding hand for a new or upgrading radio amateur, or if you are a ham in need of assistance, we are also asking both groups to send us an email at the following email address, mentor@arnewsline.org. I'll spell it out. mentor@arnewsline.org. In your note, please state if you are offering to be a mentor or are in need of training. Please include your name, call, address, email address with zip code, phone number, best time of day to call, and any other pertinent information. Our prayer. It is our hope that the nation's amateur radio community will join with QCWA and AR Newsline to make the Roy Neal K60OA Amateur Radio Mentoring Project a part of the traditions of the hobby. We also hope that it will become a lasting memorial to the radio amateur who gave so much of his life to making amateur radio the best hobby and service in the universe. Amateur Radio Newsline is a 501c3 nonprofit charity. Contributions to Newsline and the Roy Neal K60OE Amateur Radio Mentoring Project and the Amateur Radio Newsline Incorporated are tax deductible. Details on how to contribute are available by email from newsline@arnewsline.org or online at http://www.arnewsline.org. This concludes the article titled QCWA and Amateur Radio Newsline to Partner in the Roy Neal Amateur Radio Mentoring Program. The author, Bill Pasternak, call WA6ITF. What follows now is a brief summary of the individuals who have been awarded the 75-year awards. I'll just give the names and the call signs. Their information appears on page 8, 9, and 10 of the September 2007 QCWA Journal. Tom Jones, K4JM. Gerard Scarano, W1ZM. Goodwin Brennan, MD, W2EKD. Marv Bernstein, W2PAT. Larry Weintraub, W3ANV. Jim M. Hedrick, W3CP. Howard Bullock, W4LBM. Andrew B. Letson, W4BT. Barney Moffitt, W5CJZ. And Al Simmons, W6MI. Congratulations, gentlemen, and many more years beyond the 75 with the QCWA. What follows now is a plea for help, basically. This piece is titled Our Living Heritage. I started a new area on the QCWA website, and I need your help. It has become more and more apparent over the past several years that QCWA is losing history right before our eyes. This was driven home again when I received notice that Dwight, called W2ATM, had become a silent key. Dwight was QCWA member 2117. All I received was a copy of his obituary, which was very sparse concerning his amateur experience. After a Google search on W2ATM, I was able to pull together more information on Dwight and add it to his QCWSK webpage. I've had the honor of posting 158 Silent Key pages thus far, and it's time to take the next step. It's time we start honoring our members while they are still among us. I'd like biographies and pictures, high school or college graduation and current would be nice, of QCWA members that have membership numbers lower than 3,500, are over 90 years old, or are in failing health. You may also include QSL cards, pictures of your station, almost anything that pertains to your ham experience. I'd like the bios as a Word document or a text file. It would be nice for the pictures and QSL cards to be in digital format, but I do have a scanner. Include an SASE, self-addressed stamped envelope, if you want the pictures returned. In the future, we'll seek out the next group of younger members. Submit everything to me at the following email, broske@hutchtel.net. I'll say it again, broske@hutchtel.net. Or the following website, http://www.qcwa.org/silent-keys-date.htm. Or a third choice, http://our-living-heritage-qcwa-number.htm. Thanks and 73. It's signed Bob, call sign N0UF, November 0, Uniform Foxtrot, QCWA webmaster. What follows next is Chapters on the Air, an essay by Baldy Baldwin, called W0OFY. I first became aware of the QCWA as a teenager in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in the late 40s. My dad would bring home Popular Mechanics, Popular Science, and Mechanics Illustrated magazines and give them to me when he was done with them. One time he brought home a magazine called QST. A friend of my dad was Leonard Ford, W0NYO, and he must have told Dad about the magazine. I studied every page many times over and still remember the QCWA ad with its logo with the old man pounding the key and the ad with the neat Harvey Wells Bandmaster transmitter. My next introduction to the QCWA was in the early 60s while working in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. John Dinter, K0JJA, he's a silent key now, one of the local six-meter gang, came in my office at work and asked if I would join the QCWA, as he was going to activate or start a local QCWA chapter and needed members. I remembered the QCWA ad that said you had to be licensed for 25 years to join. I told John that I had been licensed for only 10 years and not eligible. He must have thought I had been licensed longer because of my W0 call, as most of the 6-meter gang had K0 calls. A few had a W0 prefix, and they were old-timers licensed before the World War II. I don't know what happened about starting a local QCWA chapter. It must have been the start of Iowa Chapter 123. The third time QCWA came into my notice was in the fall of 1991 at the ARRL South Dakota State Convention in Watertown. I was to meet with an old Minnesota friend, Everett Hoard, and Zero NVQ. Everett was now living in Lear, North Dakota, and was W0HPS in the early 50s, but let his license expire and wanted to take the general written test in Watertown. He passed the 13-word-per-minute code and technician test in Phoenix, and then was issued a technician class call and wanted to use the 13-word-per-minute CSCE before it had expired. He passed a general test and was to meet the wife and I at the Saturday night banquet in front of the banquet room in the headquarters hotel. My wife and I were staying about a block away. The wife and I got to the banquet lobby early and found an empty room with a portable bar. We each got a drink and sat down in a nice stuffed chair. The lobby was still empty when my wife asked me about my W0OFY call, as she had only seen K0s or WA0s and N0 calls on the name badges in the indoor flea market. I explained that when the W0s and K0s were used up, the FCC then went to WA0, WB0, etc. The N0 calls were issued to technician class licensees. Just then, two old-timers walked in, looked around, and then got their drinks. The pair looked like Laurel and Hardy. I told the wife that these two fellows must have W0 calls. I invited them over to our area and introduced myself and my wife. These guys were from Sioux City, Iowa, and soon joined by a big fella from Minnesota with his wife. All had W0 calls. My friend Everett arrived as the lobby was getting full. Another fellow joined our group and was the ARRL Dakota Division Director. The ARRL Director had a W0 call but was a W6 a few years before. These fellows must be ARRL bigwigs. The banquet doors were opened and the mad rush was on. I told Everett and the wives that I would get in as fast as I could and get a table for the four of us. We did find an empty table far away from the head table. When Everett and the wives arrived, I said I had better use the restroom and to save a seat for me. As I walked out, I saw Laurel and Hardy walking around near the head table. When I returned, the room was full, and with everybody seated, and found my table full. Yes, Laurel, Hardy, and the big fellows were seated at our table. This was quite a pleasant surprise that they joined us. Everybody introduced themselves, and this time I found out just who they were. Laurel, that was Al Smith, W0PEX, Island Key, Quarter Century Wireless Association, Chapter 123, Secretary Treasurer. Hardy, Dick Pittner, W0FZO, Silent Key, 3900 Club, Secretary Treasurer. Big fella from Minnesota, Bill Ogden, W0KHG, QCWA Chapter 8 Net Control. Al, W0PEX, asked if I knew John Dinter, W0JJA, at Collins. I said, yes, I knew John. Al then said that he and John started Chapter 123 along with other old-timers. He also said that Dinter and Al were both part-time salesmen for a radio electronics steady course company. I remember that John was involved and must have been the Eastern Iowa representative in Cedar Rapids, and Al, W0PEX, must have been the Western Iowa representative in Sioux City. Al asked if I was interested in joining the QCWA, and I must have said yes, and asked, what do they do? He told me about the QCWA and Chapter 123, and said to listen in next Saturday morning at 7:30 a.m. W0KHG then gave me his Chapter 8 frequency, invited me to listen in at 8 a.m., right after Chapter 123. I never heard of chapters on the air before. Dick, W0FZO, also invited me to join in the 3900 Club activity at 8 a.m. on Sunday mornings. I didn't have a working HF transmitter yet, but was working at getting my Collins KWS1 operating and didn't have a 75-meter antenna. I did have plenty of receivers and listened in to Chapter 123 and Chapter 8 the next Saturday, using my tower by shunt-feeding it as the antenna. Both chapters on the air nets were interesting, and the people were interested in the net controls reports about the Watertown activities. I was very impressed with the chapters on the air activity, and it was my first real introduction to QCWA and its activities. The chapters on the air program is a very nice way to get to know hams. I was born and raised in Minnesota, and the people at Collins said I had a Scandinavian accent. The hams on the Chapter 8 net also had the same accent. A month or so later, WZOPEX sent me the QCWA membership and the Chapter 123 application forms. I joined the QCWA in Chapter 123 in late 1991 or very early 1992. I finally got on the air sometime in 1992 with the KWS-1 and an inverted V antenna, and then joined Chapter 8 because the chapter treasurer, W0THM, Doug, the silent key, was on the net and invited me to join. It was good hearing the news from the old country, and they were very interested in my activities at Collins Radio. Chapters on the air is a very important activity in the QCWA club. It keeps members together with common interests. It is the way I got started in the QCWA. All active members have contact with the QCWA activities via the journal, and some check into their local chapter net. My son Frank and 0SFF takes me and his friends to Dayton every year. I started going in 1994 and have been there every year since. I make the crew attend the Dayton QCWA Chapter 9 banquet since I started going. I hope the new crew will join the QCWA when they get to the 25-year mark. I may not be around to see them join, but I am trying to get these kids introduced to the old-timers. Frank has about 12 years to go. I have been net control of Chapter 8 Upper Midwest Net since W0KHZ. Had a stroke a few years ago. We meet at 8 a.m. every Saturday on 3909 kilohertz plus or minus 1 kilohertz. And that essay was compiled by Baldy Baldwin, W0OFY. And talking about chapters on the air, let's look at the chapter reports. At least we'll pick and choose some of them for you. But before that, just a comment. Chapter reports are a very important part of the journal. We would like to see regular reports from all chapters. If your chapter is not represented on these pages, please ask your secretary to file a special report for the journal. Please send the reports to Chuck Walbridge, General Manager, to arrive no later than the following dates: January 1 for spring, April 1 for summer, July 1 for fall, and October 1 for winter. Now, attention as well. QCWA chapter report guidelines. All chapter reports will need to follow these limits set by the Publication Standards Committee. 500 words and 2 photos maximum. When taking photos, group together those receiving awards rather than individual pictures. Those can always be posted on a chapter webpage. When a chapter report is submitted, please include the chapter number in the title and with any photos submitted. Preferred formats for reports are Word, that's .doc, RTF, or plain text. Now, as I pick and choose these, I'll just summarize even those that I do choose, folks, because I could not possibly get all this information into one recorded session. Chapter 10, Michigan. April 19, 2007 marks the 48th anniversary of Chapter 10, and our chapter continues to grow as we welcome new members to QCWA and Chapter 10. It is with deep regret that we must report the passing of Merrill Lawrence, W8LUI, who went silent key on January 29, 2007. Merrill was to receive a 75th anniversary of licensing award this year, and it will now be presented posthumously to his family. Congratulations go out to Charles Dewey, Jr., W0CD, upon receipt of his 75th anniversary of licensing award and honorary life membership. Chapter Summer Picnic will be held on Wednesday, August 15, 2007, at the Kenwood Park in Cadillac, Michigan. Chapter 63, Oklahoma City. The Quadcentury Wireless Association Central Oklahoma Chapter 63 held their annual meeting at 11 a.m. on Monday, January 29, 2007, at the Hometown Buffet. Following an enjoyable meal and good conversation between the 15 members and guests present, an election of officers for the coming year was held. The nominating committee report was made by George Legley, W5NTL. The nominations from the floor were open. The results of the election, including those retaining office from previous elections, were as follows. President Skip Amos, N5CFM. Vice Pres Larry Watson, W5EIU. Secretary Treasurer Norm Wilson, W5FLO. Directors Elmo Black, W5JCB. Marilyn Cohen, W5KOU. George Legale, W5NTL, Rod Stewart, W5IBF. That was submitted by Leal Amos, W5SJC. Chapter 65, Niagara Frontier, New York. Tom Foley, WA2EYF, has joined the Niagara Frontier chapter. We welcome Tom to the fold. Steve Hyder, W0LUB, and his wife Arvella shared their experiences and pictures with us of their recent trip to Australia at the February luncheon. Steve was quite adept at imparting little-known facts of this exotic land that few of us will ever get to enjoy firsthand. Tom, Larry, and XYL Kathy traveled to the QTH of the Joneses, Bob, W2OZT, and Lorraine, K2ZVS, longtime chapter members. They're both on the mend from health problems, so are currently unable to attend our functions. We were proud to present Bob with his 75-year award plaque and Lorraine with her 50-year certificate and had a thoroughly enjoyable visit. We congratulate this lovely couple and anticipate seeing them regularly again at our lunches. We meet every second Saturday at noon at Brennan's Bowery Bar at Main and Transit in Clarence, New York. We encourage out-of-town visitors to join our friendly group. Join us also for our weekly net on Sunday at 1330 local time on 3900 kilohertz. That was submitted by Larry Rybecki, WA2ARA, President Secretary. Next, we go to Chapter 70, National Capital Region, Ottawa, Ontario, Canada. The chapter's first dinner meeting for 2007 was held on 20 February with 31 members in attendance. The turnout for this dinner was lower than usual due to some snowbirds resting in winter climates. President Dave Parker, VE3AV, chairing the meeting, extended thanks and appreciation for service to the chapter to retiring executive board members Ernie Brown, VA3OEB, and Jim Dean, VE3IQ. The guest speaker for the evening was Rick Bandla, VE3CVG, a Chapter 70 member, whose topic was the new D-Star that represents digital start technologies for amateur radio. Digital radio communication system originally developed by the Japanese Amateur Radio League. Along with his many years of professional work experience in the telecommunication field, Rick's amateur radio experience also encompasses his present endeavor at the Ottawa Amateur Radio Digital Group as a project leader for the implementation of D-Star in Ottawa. There are several D-Star repeater installations in Canada and in the United States, and a rapidly growing number of users. The Ottawa D-Star system, called sign VA3ODG, includes digital 1.2 kilobyte data digital voice repeaters on 2 meters, 70 centimeter, and 23 centimeter, as well as a 128 kilobyte slant S digital data radio on 23 centimeters. The OARDG implementation team expects to have their repeaters operational in April 2007. The gateway equipment, which will enable network connection beyond the Ottawa area, will be operational in May 2007. And that report for Chapter 70 in Ottawa, Ontario, was filed by Tom Bartello, VE3ELM, Secretary. Let's go to North Carolina now, Chapter 76, Blue Ridge, North Carolina. In terms of weather, we were fortunate this year here in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Our average snowfall of just over 11 inches turned out to be just over 1.5 inches so far. We have had rain, so the only people who care about the difference are those who own skis. Chapter 76 is probably one of, if not the most active chapter in QCWA, with two monthly meetings. At our first meeting, we have a guest speaker on any one of a wide range of topics. The second meeting of the month is generally a friendly get-together, for example, a meet, greet, and eat affair. A new year also brings new QCWA service awards. We are pleased to present a 50-year certificate to Ronnie Parham, K2SST, and a 55-year certificate to Jim Harrison, W4TFT. We also had a 60-year certificate for longtime member Herm Fabert, W9FHW, who now resides on the West Coast. The certificate will be mailed. Past President Al Abercrombie, W2JJS, was presented with a meritorious award from the chapter for updating our chapter roster as well as bringing us into the 21st century and sending all our communications via email. Certainly saves us money. Al had been a diligent supporter of the chapter, and this award is well deserved. That's it for now. We meet on the first and third Wednesdays of each month except December at the Golden Corral Restaurant in Hendersonville. If you're in town, stop by and visit. Let's head over to the East Coast. Yankee, that's in Massachusetts, Chapter 112, Yankee Chapter 112. The Yankee Chapter held its winter meeting at the favorite meeting place, the Yangtze River Restaurant in Littleton, Massachusetts. After a fine Chinese meal and even better conversation, the members held a QSL party. Each member was encouraged to bring a QSL card from a memorable QSO and to describe the occasion. Ernie Swenson, WB6VVA, described his first contact with Australia after trying for 12 years, his contact with Pitcairn Island and others. Mort Bartfield, W1UQ, described an effort he is making to publish in book form representations of the QSL card collection of a prominent DXer. Other reminiscences included a surprising contact with Greenland on 15 meters when the band appeared to be dead. The members are looking forward to spring in New England and the chapter's annual meeting. Filed by Bob Smith, KK3P, President. Chapter 149, Nutmeg, Connecticut. The QCWA Chapter 149 meeting was held on February 10, 2007 at the Gathering Place in Wallingford, Connecticut. Al, W1FXQ, called the meeting to order at 12:10 p.m., and we all made self-introductions. We had a total of 45 members and guests present. We also had a special guest, Chuck Walbridge, that's the QCWA General Manager, and his wife, Jan. Gary, K1MQ, gave the Treasury's report. We have a total of $2,888.84 before the expenses of today. We had a very nice buffet with plenty of food and seconds if anybody wanted it. Also, doggy bags for those who wanted them. That was submitted by Tony Perrone, W1CGI, Secretary. Moving along now to Chapter 160, Utah. Dick Beckham, W7 FVM received his 7-year golden certificate at the QCWA Chapter 160's breakfast at St. George, Utah on December 7, 2006. Dick was in the Navy from 1918 to 1934. During that time, he participated in the search for Amelia Earhart. Dick first became licensed as W7FVM in 1936. His first rig was a homebrew regenerative receiver and a broadband oscillator for a transmitter. His first contact was from Los Angeles, California to Great Falls, Montana with 5 watts. Dick attended electrical engineering school from 1938 to 1940. In 1940, he went to work for CAA, now FAA. Other recent recipients receiving golden certificates were 70 years, Ray Larson, W7NMK, 60 years, Keith Anderson, W7LQU, 55 years, Norm Pribby, W7ISD, 50 years, James Jacobs, W7DBO, and another 50 year, Boyd Thomas, KG7MP. This report for Chapter 160 in Utah was filed by Mary Ellen Vaughn, W7CKD, President. We very much want to thank all of the chapters who submitted information. As I said at the beginning of the commentary regarding chapter reports, there's just a lot of them and a lot of detail. It would be very boring, and I do not mean to demean anybody's efforts, if I just rattled call after call after call, folks. I think most of you would accept that as a logical reason to just take certain ones that I've been designated to read. Folks, this is Bob Zeta, your reader. My call again is N1BLF, November 1, Bravo Lima Foxtrot. As I pick and choose this material, I am sensitive to the fact that many of you who are listening to it might want to hear other topics read occasionally in the QCWA Journal, taped or recorded format. If you'd like to do that, contact the QCWA Journal folks, probably Chuck Walbridge, and we'll coordinate that information for our future recordings. Now, at the end of the chapter reports on page 38 of the Summer 2007 Journal, it's printed a list titled Memorial Scholarship Fund. There are two columns, column name and column honoring. I'll read this off for you all. Ida Fujimoto, honoring W6CZL. Chapter 28, honoring K2FMB. Chapter 60, honoring QCWA Silent Keys. Ed Saruga, honoring K9AWC. Jerome Mulberg, W2JQS. Chapter 108, N7EIF. Chapter 108, WB7JC. Chapter 108, W7RQQ. Chapter 49, K4KAS. Chapter 49, W4PDI. Charles Floring, QCWA Silent Keys. I'll continue with a big reminder about the kickoff of the 60th anniversary of the Quarter Century Wireless Association in Denver, Colorado, at the 2007 International QCWA Convention, which is October 4 through 7, 2007. Very briefly, the headquarters hotel is the DoubleTree Hotel, 3203 Quebec Street, Denver, Colorado, 80207. A block of single or double rooms are available from $113.70, which includes tax. For reservations, call the hotel toll-free at 1-800-222-TREE, numerically 8733. There's a lot of information about that on page 28, and if you have any intentions of going, you should probably make your reservations as quickly as possible. And with regard to the QCWA celebration of its 60th anniversary, the organization is preparing a new award, the 60-60 Award for the Quarter-Century Wireless Association. A very handsome color copy of it is on the inside of the front cover of this issue. The Quarter-Century Wireless Association has a cake in the oven, and the ice cream churn is a-churnin' in anticipation of celebrating its 60th diamond anniversary. Time truly does fly. It was what seems like only yesterday that on November 14, 1947, during a 10-meter round table QSO, the suggestion was made to form an association of ham radio operators that had been licensed for 25 years or more. The very next month, with that thought in mind, a group of hams met on Friday evening, December 5, 1947, in New York City. That evening, the Quarter Century Wireless Association was born. In order to celebrate our 60th anniversary in grand style, the QCWA is pleased to announce a new limited availability operating award to celebrate this momentous occasion known as the QCWA 60-60 Award. This award is unique in that it represents the first award of its type offered by the QCWA. In order to raise the awareness of and stimulate new membership in the QCWA, the award is available to both members and non-members alike. The basic requirements are simple. Make 60 two-way contacts with 60 different QCWA members. The QCWA 60-60 Award became available with its announcement at the 2007 Dayton Hamvention on May 18, 2007 by President John Johnston, W3BE. The final day for contacts is no later than 2400 UTC June 30, 2008. All applications for the award should be postmarked no later than September 1, 2008. The specific eligibility requirements are as follows. The applicant must submit a list of 60 different two-way contacts with QCWA members and their associated membership numbers. Two-way contacts may be made utilizing any RF mode of operation on any frequency authorized for amateur use to include the use of VHF and UHF repeaters. Submitted log information should include the time, UTC, date of contact, call sign, QCWA member's name, and the member's membership number. The applicant should include with each application a statement in his or her own words that the contacts are true and correct and were made in accordance with both the amateur regulatory requirements for his country of residence and the QCWA requirements as set forth for the award. There is a fee of $2, U.S. dollars, for applicants, check, cash, or money order only. No credit cards or stamps are accepted. Award certificates will be gratis to stations outside North America, but donations to defray postage handling will be gratefully accepted. Applicants are requested to submit the requested information to call sign W2OD, that's Whiskey 2, Oscar Delta, Robert Buss, B-U-U-S, Robert Buss, B-U-U-S, 8 Donner Street, that's 8 D-O-N-N-E-R Street, Holmdel, New Jersey, H-O-L-M-D-E-L, Holmdel, New Jersey, N-J, zip code 07733. -2004, United States of America. Specific award questions should be directed to the above address, that's for Robert Buss, or emailed to his call, W2OD, that's Whiskey 2 Oscar Delta, at AOL.com. I think it's time to change the pace of the reading, something a little more readable. I can understand that. I'm going to pick up another episode of Chapterize book that was written by Bill Pasternak, now a director of QCWA. Bill's call is WA6ITF. The material was edited by Lou Ann Kug, KV6HP. Bill titles the book Geeks, a chapterized book about growing up as a kid ham in the Big Apple. The subtitle begins Races and Those Warm Spring Nights. When I first took to the airwaves, I was typical of most newbies. I wanted to be part of everything. I wanted to try everything, and I wanted to join everything. So it was that I quickly signed up as a member of both our area AREC and RACES operations. Races was particularly interesting because it gave a ham a separate and quasi-secret identity. These were the days of the Cold War. Nuclear annihilation was openly talked about by the politicos of the era. And back in the late 50s, to be a racist member in the city of New York meant keeping your racist identity secret, except for 1 hour a week during approved drills. When looked at by today's standards, the whole thing was quite asinine. You joined races to become an unpaid public servant. In exchange, you were given a New York City racist ID number. But you could not tell anyone that number belongs to you for fear that some spy from the Soviet Union might find out. Never mind that no self-respecting spy would be interested in a bunch of kids and old men with nothing better to do than play with radios. And I guess nobody in the chain of command gave thought that even a 7-watt, 6-meter transmitter could be heard on television sets as far as several miles away. No. The cloak of silence was in place, and it was the sworn duty of us racist operators to defend the secrecy of our numbered identification to our last breath. In those days, New York City racists operated under the call W2NEM. I have no idea whose call that was. All I cared about was that from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every Thursday night, my name and my FCC-issued WA2HVK call sign disappeared as I took on the identity of W2NEM-219. For 60 minutes each week, I was a defender of America with my $20 ham radio station. Each practice message was sent word by word, each word repeated 2 or 3 times. In my heart, I knew I was definitely holding back the flow of communism and would keep it from ever reaching our shore. Then came reality, spelled TVI. Let's call my first TVI complainant Miss Betty. Betty was about 36 years old and a spinster. If memory serves me correctly, she was one of those people who did not interface very well with the rest of our block's many society. While she had grown up in the same apartment where she still lived, Betty was kind of an enigma to the rest of us. All we knew is that she lived with her mother and went to college. It was about 8:15 on a spring evening. I was just finishing up my racist practice message of the week when the phone rang. My mother said it was our neighbor, Miss Betty. She was calling to complain that I was interfering with her TV set on Channel 2. I told Mom to tell Betty that I was completing my racist net commitment and would not be transmitting again until after the 11 p.m. news was over. I figured that would be that. I always kept my part of the bargain, except when DX was in. By way of historical note, on school days, I would operate in the afternoon, do my homework, and I always watched 11 p.m. local news on WNBC. Then I would go on the air for half an hour and then go to sleep. For about 2 years, you could set your watch by my on-the-air operating schedule. The variation came on weekends. Like most teenage hams, I would turn on my rig as soon as I woke up, and it would remain on, tuned to our local calling frequency at 50.4 megahertz. On Friday and Saturday, that might be as late as 4 or 5 a.m. the following morning. Not that I was on the air all that time. Rather, the radio was my intercom to my friends, and we would mainly start chatting after primetime television ended and continue until we passed out from sheer exhaustion. And so it was, on a Sunday afternoon a few weeks later, that Miss Betty approached me and my father as he, his friend Charlie, and I were sitting out on the stoop in front of our house. She was obviously more than just a bit annoyed at something. We were all about to learn the extent of the chip she was carrying on her shoulder. "Mr. Pasternak," she said to Dad, "last night at 3 a.m. I was trying to watch a movie on Channel 3 from Philadelphia, and every 2 minutes your son's radio station caused the picture to get blotched up, and the sound went crazy. What are you going to do about it?" My father stood there for a moment, eye to eye with Miss Betty. He then looked over to Charlie, then to me, and back to Miss Betty. Then, with a strange smile on his face that I had never seen before, and never saw afterward either, he uttered a single sentence. "Betty, at 3 o'clock in the morning, I can think of a more enjoyable thing that a pretty woman like you could be doing than trying to watch an old movie from Philadelphia." I was still not worldly enough to understand the inference of my father's statement. I do know that Miss Betty's face turned bright red, and she looked as if she would have killed all of us on the spot, if she would have had the viable weapon with her, that is. Suddenly, like a soldier in basic training, she did an about-face and marched off. In the remaining years that I was still living at my parents' home and operating 6-meter AM, none of us ever again saw Miss Betty, nor did I ever get another TVI complaint from her. As noted previously, when I was first licensed as WA2HVK in 1959, I immediately plunged myself headfirst into AREC. The ARRL's Amateur Radio Emergency Corps, the predecessor of today's ARIS, and New York City Races. In Races, I held the technical call sign, W2NEM-219. Being on 6-meter AM, it was one way to justify knocking out many neighborhood TV sets with TVI generated by my unshielded homebrew transmitter. At least that's the way a teenage ham would think. I could always tell a complaining neighbor, "Well, I am doing it to help protect you in case there ever is an atomic bomb attack." Remember, this was the height of the Cold War. But like everything else, my interest in this aspect of the hobby began to disappear as other areas of interest took up my time. In the intervening years, I grew out of my teens, bought my first brand new car, and went into business with a non-ham named Bob Sarrett in the television repair shop located in Washington Heights area of New York. In fact, it was not until the night of the Great Northeast Blackout, remember that one, that I once again checked into the Kings County AREC and CDNet. For those of you not familiar with New York City, Washington Heights is the area near the George Washington Bridge on Manhattan's Upper West Side. And at about 5 p.m. on November 9, 1965, I was alone in the store trying to repair a Granco FM table radio and having little success. Each time I thought I had its drift problem licked, off it would wander up the band. I had changed every resistor and capacitor more than once. The oscillator mixer, too, was replaced at least a dozen times. I had spent so many hours on it that my frustration was showing when little Sally wandered in to say, "Hello?" I never did know her last name, or if I did, I have forgotten it. She was a very cute neighborhood 16-year-old that had a passing interest in electronics. She was also more than willing to go out and do lunch and supper food runs for Bob and me when we were staying late or working a weekend. She was one of the nicest youngsters I had ever met, and always felt that this kid was a tribute to the way her mom and dad were bringing her up. So it was, as Sally asked what I was working on, I told her about the wandering Granco receiver. As I did, I shoved it a bit too hard in her direction. One of the test leads from my multimeter shorted out, and sparks flew everywhere. The lights in the store dimmed, indicating a short circuit, so I quickly pulled the plug from the wall. But the lights kept getting dimmer. Then they would brighten for a few seconds and grow even dimmer. That's when Sally noted that the neon signs on some of the adjacent stores were blinking out. Sally and I rushed outside onto Broadway. We watched in horror as the lights in store windows, in apartments above stores, as traffic lights and street lights all dimmed and extinguished. Being a radio and TV repair shop, I ran inside and grabbed one of the battery-operated AM sets. Sally and I scanned the band, but there was nothing but weak signal from far away, the kind you hear on the AM band as dusk approaches, but you are not yet into grade line propagation. Too weak to be readable, but you know something is there. Most evident was the lack of local stations. The AM broadcast band was dead. "Oh, my God," I said out loud. "I've just blown out all of New York City." The charming Sally was not smiling. She seemed as frightened as almost everyone we saw passing along Upper Broadway. Here's the epilogue. It was not until the middle 1990s, driving home up the I-405 freeway in Los Angeles, that I found out the real cause of the Great Northeast Blackout. With nobody on the repeater at that early AM hour, I tuned into a coast-to-coast AM program hosted by Art Bell, W6OBB, on KABC, to find his guests talking about the event. And in short order, I learned that at about the same time the lights began to dim all across the northeastern United States, a UFO was seen, or at least reported to have been seen, hovering over the Sir Adam Beck No. 2 electric generating station at Niagara Falls, New York. This supposedly caused a superpower relay to trip, shut down the plant, and created a ripple effect throughout the entire power grid, according to the experts. I thought to myself, well, that's as good an explanation as any of the others I have heard. At least, it wasn't my fault after all. Then I said out loud, "Sally, are you listening to this too?" DEWA6ITF. Folks, that completes Bill Pasternak's submission of Geeks, a chapterized book about growing up as a kid ham in the Big Apple. I want to go back for a second and comment to the fact that there is a continuing large piece here by George Hart, W1NJM. It's titled Random Recollections of an Old Ham. This particular session here is back to the Connecticut Wireless Association. However, I could not fit it in tonight. We're just about out of time because it runs over 30 minutes, and since I only can put about 78 minutes on a recording for you folks at QCWA, I just have to give him credit for a fine job continued. Hopefully I'll work on him rather than Bill Pasternak's Geeks next edition, and we'll come up with the spot where George continues with his field day experiences and the trip to the Arizona Amateur Radio Club of Phoenix. This now does complete the reading of the Quarter-Century Wireless Association Journal for the summer of the year 2007. The QCA may be reached at area 508-405-1930 or at qcwagm@rnc.com. This recording is a production of the Courage Handy Ham System, done in cooperation with the Quarter-Century Wireless Association. Handy Hams may be reached at area 763-520-0512 or at email handyham@courage.org. My name is Bob Zeta. My amateur radio call sign is N1BLF. Thanks a lot for listening along with me again to the QCWA Journal.